Good evening, Chairperson.
We will start with our meeting in a little while. I'm sure it is now 6:30, so we should be starting. It is very important. I don't know whether the Secretary would want to deal with the matters of the attendance in this meeting.
Good afternoon and thank you, Chair. Present is Mr. Munyai, Ms. Geller, Mr. Sokacha, Dr. Jacobs, Dr. Harvard, Ms. Kwahube, Ms. Wilson, Ms. Ishmael, Dr. Tembekwayo, Ms. Chirwa, Mr. and Mr. Van Staden. I haven't received any apologies. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much indeed. For not having, I think the most important thing is to welcome all esteemed honorable members. I must welcome you all of you who logged in before this meeting, members of this committee. It is important to welcome the media, the Ministry of the Department of Health, who are present before this meeting. But before we proceed, congratulations, the Deputy Minister, Dr. Zlomo, who used to be the chair of this important portfolio committee. Allow me also on your behalf to also congratulate the Deputy Minister, the former Deputy Minister, Honorable Pasha, who is now our Minister of Health. So they've been very active this morning with the World Health Organization. But it's important that I should, before we proceed, that I would like to remind all the members, honorable members of Parliament, that this virtual meeting is deemed to be the precinct of Parliament and therefore constitute a meeting of the committees of the National Assembly for official purposes only. In addition to the rules of virtual sitting, the rules of the National Assembly, including the rules of debate, will apply. Members enjoy the same powers and privileges that apply in the sitting of the National Assembly. Members should equally note that anything said in this virtual platform is deemed to have been said to the House and may be ruled upon. All members who have logged in shall be considered to be present and are requested to mute their microphones, only unmute when recognized to speak by the Honorable Chairperson. This is because the microphones are very much sensitive and will pick up noises which might disturb the attention of the other members and our guests before this session. When recognized to speak, please unmute your mic, microphone, and connect your video. That is the request and appeal we are making before the esteemed honorable members. Members may make use of the icons on the bar at the bottom of their screen, which has an option that allows esteemed honorable members to put up his or her hands, her hand, to raise point of order. Tariff will assist the honorable chairperson in alerting the chairperson to members requesting to speak. When using the virtual systems, members are urged to refrain or desist from unnecessary points of orders or interjection. It is important, honorable members, that before we proceed, we make sure that we give you some little glimpse about our oversight visit it is not going to be really a huge session because the principal purpose as per our agenda is to get the briefing from the ministry around the COVID-19. I must say, honourable members, esteemed honourable members, COVID-19 has caused the unprecedented consequences that humankind has ever seen, both here in the Republic of South Africa, in the advent of democracy, and elsewhere in the African continent and across the globe. Post these 4 weeks of civil unrest, the Portfolio Committee resolved to conduct an oversight visit in KwaZulu-Natal and also Gauteng Province, respectively. The basis of our visit was to make concrete analysis to what extent did the unrest disrupt the healthcare-related infrastructure? To what extent did the unrest disrupt the vaccination program between these two provinces? To what an extent that the much-needed oxygen supply disparately needed in our hospital has been disrupted? And broadly, the healthcare services delivery in general. Honourable members, we are not going to go to details on that matter, since we'll have a special meeting to adopt the oversight report with regard to the oversight in KwaZulu-Natal and as well as Gauteng. But it's important to give you an 1 second glimpse that the in our oversight visit, we have observed that tremendous efforts has been put forward to resolutely and progressively change the quality of healthcare of our people for the better in both KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng province respectively. And of course, there were subjective factors or challenges that we have observed. We will deal with them, those details, when we adopt the report, as I said earlier. We are standing tall as this portfolio committee, indeed, and we salute the sacrifice of the healthcare frontline workers, who are the backbone of our healthcare systems and lifeblood of our public service core architecture in defense of our people against COVID-19 epidemic. Therefore, these heroes and heroines deserve an honor and a great respect from all South Africans for their continuous work they continue to do in service of our democratic country. Their tireless hard work did not go unnoticed. In my capacity as acting chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and on behalf of honorable esteemed members of this Portfolio Committee collective, we are making a clarion call that all provinces must expedite with an operation Siabalanga going towards the people to vaccinate all eligible community members as a whole across the length and breadth of our country. We must build a broad front of faith-based organization, community-based organization, school governing bodies, community policing forum, public sector trade union, and also organized business. As a partnership of government to accelerate the vaccine program. Esteemed honorable members, it is our national duty, our moral obligation to guarantee that all South Africans have access to vaccine. All get vaccinated. I raise this issue in the context that we're receiving vaccine rollout briefing tonight. It is important that we proceed with our agenda. May I please ask the Secretary to flag the agenda so that all members are clear on details of our program. Thank you very much. The meeting is formally opened. May I please ask the Secretary to flag the agenda or any supporting staff to do so. Ms. Manjalamba, thank you very much. Just like it again. Sorry, I just missed it. My apology about that, Ms. Manjalamba. We have dealt with the opening remarks by the acting chairperson. Attendance confirmation of honourable members, esteemed honourable members, has been done. May we receive the apologies, Ms. Manjalamba, if there are any?
I haven't received any apologies, Chair. Thank you.
Oh, fantastic. Therefore, we may have some confirmation of the attendance by the ministry. I saw Honourable Deputy Minister Dr. Zomo in presence. If that could be confirmed, Ms. Manjalamba, so that we can proceed.
Yes, Chair, the ministry has joined the meeting. The minister, together with the deputy minister, have joined the meeting. Thank you.
Minister Joe Parsa, as well as the deputy minister, Dr. Zomo, you are all welcome. It is an opportunity for you to please help to share with the portfolio committee on the progress of the vaccine rollout, the fundamental issues which this portfolio committee and honorable members collective have really a very strong interest on the matter. The platform is yours, please.
Chairperson, may I please?
Yes.
I don't know whether I'm out of order, Chair. Based on the attendance and who is here, I formally want to propose that we accept the agenda.
Oh, yes, fantastic. It is my technical error. It is a meeting procedure that this agenda be adopted. Honorable Sokacha has already moved to adopt this agenda. May I please have the seconder?
Sheikh Imam.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Imam Sheikh. The agenda has been duly adopted. We may therefore proceed with the Minister Dr. Joe Parsa.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. My greetings to my colleagues, the Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Let me firstly thank you, all of you and the Acting Chair of the Committee for a very warm welcome to myself and Honorable Zomo, my colleague in this new responsibility as Deputy Minister. I think I'm speaking on his behalf also in thanking all of you. I'm sure later on when he comes to contribute, he'll also say so. We're quite appreciative of your support. I must mention, Honorable Chair, that the messages came not only from my comrades from the ANC, but also some members from the other side, and quite appreciated for that magnanimous support from some of our colleagues and honorable members from the other side of the house. That's really quite appreciated. I know that we're meeting at the first time in this way where the Honorable Lomo is no more the chair. So as much as I know it's a loss to the portfolio committee, but it's also a gain for the executive, and I'm quite appreciative of that decision by the Excellency President. I must just assure members that I had no hand in depriving you of the services of Honorable Lomo. I had no knowledge, neither did I also know that this 2 weeks after the 5th of August that I'll be in this position. So don't blame me for depriving you of his continued services. I had no say in these decisions. We do have the full team, besides myself and Dr. Lomo. We also have DG Butelezi and various other senior members of the department. So I'm very grateful, honorable members, to have this opportunity to give you the update. I'll just give some highlights, and then I'll give over to DG, who will indicate who's going to give the presentation for this evening. Just from my side, just to say on the where we are on the vaccination, where we are, honorable members, is that we are at the stage where the supply of vaccines is fairly stable. We do have adequate supplies, and the team will speak more about that. We are very confident that during the course of this month, going into next month, and if the suppliers continue to supply as agreed, we should be able to have enough stock to continue to administer the vaccine to our people right up to the end of the year. Secondly, in terms of the other aspect of capacity, because it's one thing to have the stock, but you have the human resources and the facilities. I can say with confidence that we believe at this stage that we do have adequate capacity in terms of the human resources and also physical infrastructure to administer the vaccines to our people. This includes both public and also private facilities. As you are aware, a number of private businesses, especially pharmacies, including your big chain pharmacies and also independent pharmacies, have also come on board to help us, including some of the medical schemes which have made sites available. But also besides the fixed sites, all our provinces have also come on board to say, as I had the chair in his opening, that we must also use the slogans, let's take the vaccine to the people. So all our provinces are also implementing outreach programs. As the honorable members will also be aware, because of this confidence, on Friday the 20th, we then decided to open up the vaccination to all adult South Africans. As you will be aware, we've been building capacity in terms of stock and also in terms of capacity to administer to the people. And now that we believe, we started with the health workers, increased to teachers, educators and people in the education sector, security cluster, the police, soldiers, and then open to other sectors. But now we've opened up to everybody above the age of 18. And I must just comment to say the uptake has been quite encouraging from the 20th on Friday. The weekends are usually smaller numbers because we still have only few sites. And also the uptake on weekends, I think people have got many other things on weekends. But just judging by yesterday, also on Monday, the uptake was also remained very high, almost similar numbers to the Friday uptake. So at this stage, it is quite encouraging. Now, of course, we are very aware of the fact that while we have increased our capacity, we need to sustain the interest of the people in taking the vaccine. And in this regard, we are aware that we do have a challenge in terms of fake news, especially in the social media. We also have an increased circulation of this from the anti-vaccination campaigners. So we are quite conscious of this, that we need to improve our capacity to communicate better. But there will be, I think the team will say something about that. So that's really our challenge. Because we still have a huge target of, say, by the end of the year, at least if we could reach 60%, if possible 70% of the adult population. So that's what we are aspiring to, because that will help to open the economy and open many other social activities. So with that introduction, Honorable Chairperson, can I ask the DG to indicate, and I hope they will keep it not too long because this is an update maybe 20, 25 minutes so that there is more time for discussion. DG.
Thank you very much, Minister, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, Honorable Chairperson, and members and colleagues. Before I hand over to Dr. Crisp, who will do the presentation, just want to indicate that I'm actually joined by a few senior managers. Dr. Nicholas Crisp, who will do the presentation, is the DDG in the department. Then we've got Dr. Kwaina Tulare, who is also well known, is the senior manager in the department. We've got Ms. Annelie Swakele, who is the acting DDG for PHC. We've got Dr. Barry Kisnasami, who is responsible for occupational health services. We are also joined by Mr. Johannes Hatler, who is our PLO. And then we have Ms. Ayanda Ngubo from the office of the DG. May I then hand over to Dr. Nicholas Crisp to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chairperson, good evening. Thank you very much. Good evening, Minister, Deputy Minister, honourable members of the House, DG, and colleagues. I will share quickly the screen, and as the Minister asked, I will try to be short. There's quite a lot of slides, but I mostly have done that so that in your own time you're able to go through the slides and look at the figures. But allow me to take you through as quickly as possible. So as always, we deal with a number of issues. We'll just very briefly talk about vaccine supply security and then about progress with the vaccinations. And I want to concentrate on demand generation and specifically tell you about a transport project that is going on for demand generation. In terms of the vaccines, we're in a very strong vaccine position at the moment. This is the strongest position we've ever been in. We've received so far almost 22 million doses of vaccine, but what's more important is that in the country at the moment, there are more than 10 million doses of vaccine. You can see in the slides here, the 2nd of August, a delivery of one, and every Sunday evening, generally, we get a delivery of Pfizer vaccines, but we also got a COVAX donation during that period, and we've already received the donation of the 5.66, which I think we've already reported on before. During the week of the 9th of August, there were further deliveries, and we also received for the first time a Johnson & Johnson delivery. Now, during these 2 weeks of the 16th and the 23rd of August, the Pfizer vaccine will still arrive during the week. And fortunately, we are now starting to see deliveries of Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is scheduled for the 30th of August together with the Pfizer vaccine. And in fact, there's another scheduled delivery on the 31st of August for Johnson & Johnson. So we're in a very strong position as far as vaccines are concerned.
Dr. Christ.
Yes,
sorry,
Chair?
I must apologize. I didn't see the names, the hands of the two honorable members. I think they are saying question, please. I think... honorable members, I know you may want to raise some questions, but I thought perhaps with something that we can do after the presentation, if it's a point of order, I may allow you to do that. I saw Honorable Gwahube and also Honorable, I think, Ishmael, and also Honorable Pansad.
No, Chair. I think it's for questions to be noted for later, not now.
Oh, thank you. I thought I'm ignoring. So my sincere apology, honourable members. I will note all the questions. I'll ask Ms. Majalamba to help me consolidate the list. Thank you very much indeed. You may proceed. My apology, Dr. Nicholas Christ, for interrupting you.
Thank you, Chair.
Your flowing presentation. Thank you.
Not at all, Chair. I'll try and accelerate a bit as well. So in terms of registration, as we heard from the Honourable Minister, we have now started registering people in the population age group of 18 to 34. And this was now up to the 22nd of August when we put the slide presentation together. We had 833,000 people registered in that age category. We also now have had, as of today, pretty close to 11 million registered. But what we don't show on these figures is that we are also registering people in workplaces without them going through the normal individual registration, because we bulk register them. So there are a larger number of people than this who are actually registered. But it does tell you that the younger population are registering. Turning to the vaccinations, again, this is the same date. It's 2 days ago. We saw that the vaccinations, what this graph is showing you is per province in a different color. And it's showing you the numbers of vaccinations per day, starting from February when the Sisonke program started. This is the period of the Sisonke program until the 17th of May. And then each province's progress in the increase in the number of vaccinations per day over the period until now, 2 days ago. And what we saw is a slump in the number of vaccinations in all provinces in the period following the 21st of July. And that was the time at which we were at our lowest ever vaccines availability, and some of the vaccination sites ran out. It was also at a time when we were completing a large number of public sector essential worker programs. We're pleased to note that the daily vaccinations in all provinces have risen. And in fact, since then, in the last day or two, they have been higher than this that is shown as the highest peak in this particular graph. So we have had some restoration, but I'm going to talk about why it's important to continue with this. So what we've had so far is vaccines administered. So this is individual doses. It was 10.5 million doses 2 days ago. It's over 11 million now. And that's made up of Johnson & Johnson vaccine and Pfizer vaccine. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine is the almost 500,000 doses during Sisonke, and the 1.873 million doses since the start of the vaccination program. The bulk of this was in the essential services public programs, but as you can see, that was only 1.5 million doses. And since then, a lot of public service Johnson & Johnson vaccines. What you can see is that the Pfizer vaccine, which requires two doses, have had first doses administered 5.692 million doses and second doses of 2.4. So what is important is second dose Pfizer and first dose or only dose of Johnson & Johnson is fully vaccinated individuals. We'll see those figures in a moment. What you see in the graphs is the Johnson & Johnson vaccines per province during those two periods of the campaign. And you see the Pfizer vaccine shown here on one graph with the green bar as first doses and the gold bar as second doses. But what is more important and what we watch very closely in the department is the individuals vaccinated. Now, we are targeting pretty close to 40 million adults that is part of this part of our campaign. And at the moment, we have vaccinated over 8 million individuals. And some of those people have had two doses of Pfizer and some have had Johnson & Johnson. So we're sitting just under 5 million of the 39 million or 40 million people who are fully vaccinated. In the table on the right-hand side, you can see the actual figures. There's the 39.79 million, the 8 million who've been vaccinated with individual people, which is one-fifth of the target population is now vaccinated. And obviously, we want to get up to a way higher figure than that before the end of this year. Somewhere around between 60 and 70% would be a good target to get to. And if we can get to 70, that would be even better. In terms of the individuals vaccinated, what I've shown here is just the last few days to see that, as I showed in that other graph, the general decrease in the daily vaccinations and the weekend vaccinations, when the graph is completely on the bottom line, there's no weekend vaccinations. And you see it slowed down completely to almost no weekend vaccinations around the 15th of August. This has now started to pick up again. But what we're interested in is now is seeing this as a sustained increase. This was last Friday when the 18 to 34-year-olds were included in the vaccination program. In terms of individuals vaccinated, these are those figures I showed earlier, the 8 million individuals vaccinated with the 4.8 fully vaccinated. And one is able to see by district who is doing the largest number of vaccinations. I will talk in a moment about vaccinations per 100,000 population, which gives a better idea, because obviously this is just purely numbers. But what it does show is the trend and the dips for the weekends, where it lifts off the bottom line, it means there are weekend vaccinations taking place. And what we're interested in is a sustained increase in this daily vaccination total. In terms of the age groups and the sex of the individuals that are vaccinated, if we look at the overall total, we see that 61% of the people vaccinated so far are female and 39% are male. And that is the problem that we have been talking about in the media, that we would like to encourage more men to come forward because especially in the older categories, we must have vulnerable men in the population because this is a poor performing segment of our total target at the moment. On the Friday, the 20th of August alone, I've just added this extra table to show the 20 to 29s and 30 to 39s. Unfortunately, that's the way we capture it, not 18 to 34. But you get a sense there were 61,000 vaccinations done in that age group alone on that day. And that's vaccinations on the first day that we are reporting for that age group. So the bottom line is, and what we are reporting is that we have vaccines, we have capabilities, but we are struggling to get the demand up. So I'd like to quickly go through these six slides that talk a little bit about different components of the demand generation, just so that the members of the House can be aware of the campaigns that are building at the moment, some of which have started to roll out, but you should see more and more of this in the weeks and months ahead. So the first one is to give the program higher visibility by increasing signage and billboards, by making sure there are banners in malls, that there's recognizable branding, and trying to get champions, people who are leaders and influencers in communities, such as we saw in Limpopo with the ZCC church leaders coming out strongly in support of the vaccination campaign. We also would like to appeal to political leaders at all levels of all parties to get involved in the campaign and encourage people to be vaccinated. And we are partnering with a whole range of private sector partners, both in the health space and elsewhere, to get media campaigns and rollouts for the branding and get them to co-brand the same messages with us. So just creating visibility. The second part of getting us prepared is to make sure we put information in people's hands. Where should they go? Who should they listen to? Where do they get information? And so that they can know where the sites are to go for vaccination or if sites are coming to them, when those sites are coming to their communities. So there's a comprehensive information and education material that is being provided, and slowly but surely more of this information on paper and in the on the airwaves will be available. We are trying to communicate the nearest functional sites and trying to get our leaders and people in the newspapers, on the pulpits, in the schools, in the workplaces to help inform people where those vaccination sites are. Of course, social media is important. For older people, it's not so much of an issue, but for young people, it's extremely powerful and they all spend a lot of time on social media. So we want to make sure there's more information available to them. We'd like the education authorities and the teachers in the public and private sector to give young people information so that they're able to take it home and share that information with people in their communities. And we want to make sure that we explain which vaccines are available and how those vaccines work so that people understand more of the facts. The third focus is to use local media. Now, national media is not bad for giving us mileage and visibility, but local media is able to give continuous engagement of the messages at, in local languages, local content of that is domestic to what people experience on every day. So dealing with the human stories, the issues about individuals, rather than this kind of presentation where I'm just showing you facts and figures at a very high level. Using radio stories and radio slots to boost confidence and collaborating with local newspapers. Again, not to say we're not interested in the big national media, but we would like to reach into communities in households using this local information. That's where people will find out about their own vaccination sites rather than sifting through 3,000, a list of 3,000 in a big national media. We do want to convey information about the adverse events and to make people aware about the notifiability and where to get information about what is going on in that space of adverse events and the reports that we hear about fatalities, whereas up to now, not one of those fatalities is found to be causal for any of the vaccines. And then using weekly radio slots. Of course, local mobilizing and canvassing, the door-to-door type reach out to ward-based care. We need private people, public people, different groups like those with disabilities in communities, and using all the various kinds of groupings of individuals and organizations in the community to play a role. But they need to have the information available them to do it effectively, and that's what we are now concentrating on in these couple of weeks ahead. A lot of people at community level are more effective communicating with their communities and in mobilizing and canvassing people than we could ever be from a national level. We need to outreach because it's quite inconvenient for many people. And although it might seem small amounts of money, even 40 rand to some people is an obstacle for them to be able to get to vaccination. So we are encouraging all the provinces and monitoring more and more outreach services and getting them to appoint vaccine ambassadors and champions within communities to go around and provide information on a door-to-door basis. So there are a lot of WhatsApp groups, but they're not all being used constructively. So there's more effort now in using these WhatsApp groups to mobilize and provide information to, so that groups of people who are supporters of vaccines can go and inform others. And of course, for the younger community, TikTok is extremely positive, popular. So we are also making sure there are more messages on that medium. And then we're encouraging people with credibility and seniority in communities like executive councils and mayors to mobilize communities and to do door-to-door campaigns. I want to talk very briefly just now about one of our new initiatives that we are piloting relating to access strategies. So if we are not always able to move whole big vaccination stations, but there are still communities for whom it is difficult to get to the vaccination station. So we are looking at a means, together with some sponsors, to transport people to vaccination sites and back home again. But there are some home-based vaccination programs, particularly for people with disabilities and elderly who are really unable to move around. There's more of a district-based promotion taking place. We've learned from the more rural provinces that using community health workers more effectively is extremely important. So working with the existing primary healthcare mobile services and expanding to additional mobile sites is part of the deliberate strategy. Of course, we've worked to try and build the weekend programs, and it's extremely difficult because of staffing and a range of access issues over weekends, but there are now a number of weekend vaccination sites, particularly in the more highly densely populated areas. There are some strategies to reach out to churches on Sundays and to malls on Saturdays and other places of worship at the appropriate times as well. So the message is to build this friendly service and to be positive for everybody. There are a number of other activities, which I don't think I'll go into too much, except to say that we are targeting the 60-plus population very positively and very aggressively because those are the most vulnerable people in the community. So if I can just briefly say, transport is very important because without transport, people can't move to and from vaccination sites. So there's been a lot of research done on buses, walking, taxis, and personal use of vehicles to try and understand which communities where are using which modes of transport to get to the vaccination sites. And what we've found is that for a lot of people, it's an impediment unless you can walk because it's expensive and they don't have vehicles, they don't have taxis. And unless you are using the taxi or the bus to get to work, why would you want to spend your hard-earned poor amounts of money to access a vaccination site. So using the information we've got, we've been looking at what is actually going on in rural households, in people who are living with disabilities and low-income quintiles, in particular as the targets, to see how can we improve access to transport to get these people to vaccination sites. So I'm almost done, Chair. The intervention is that we are busy with a pilot program that started this week at a number of sites, 7 high-volume sites, where we are working in parallel with our programs to reach into the SASO work that has already been done and see whether we can create easy transport options to get people from those 3 target communities to vaccination sites and back again without costing them anything. So the proof of concept has had a briefing session. We have embarked on the service in the bringing of people to these 7 sites, and we will run the program for a number of days to see just how well it picks up. We've had a number of people like the Gift of the Givers expressing interest and participating in the program to try and help us make it viable. And so the proof of concept will run now until the 31st of August. Then we will evaluate the concept over a couple of days and then finally scale up. And we hope that by the 1st of September, we've worked out the best ways to roll out this transport access program. The target population is primarily older people, both male and female in that group, and the lower socioeconomic levels are a particular target. And of course, we are preferring to target people without medical insurance. And the principles is that we will use mixed modalities. So we're going to use Metro Bus, Private Bus, Taxi, and Uber, who has donated 1 million free rides, all of them working in tandem, not just one method of getting to people because different communities have different kinds of needs. And we're looking at what makes a pickup point viable. So obviously the existing pickup points, but seeing which ones of those pickups are viable. And can we run this as a cost-effective and reliable means of accessing transport? So the targeted areas are these where we are already monitoring vaccinations per day in Gqeberha, in Sandton, through Alexandra, through Bellville and into the Cape Flats, and then Doornkop and Cornubia, where we have very large sites. This is more in the Centurion area, very large sites where we're able to transport people to. I won't go into more detail except to say that for each site, like for instance here where we have a 4,000 per day capacity sitting in Gallagher Estate, and in Sandton we have a huge capacity, but these sites are far removed from the population that we would like to use them. So it's difficult to move these sites to those people, but it might be easier to move people to these sites. And here's the list of the 7 pilot projects. All running with private sector, very large centers to see whether we can better utilize that capacity. So that's the contribution for this evening. Thank you very much, Chair.
Very much for your presentation, Dr. Crisp. Let me find out if there's any addition from the ministry before I could allow esteemed honorable members.
Just to say, small addition in terms of in about 2 days, in terms of the last night's total for, it's just a little under 10.8 million. It was 10,790,000. So clearly by the end of today will be the other side, probably close to 10.9. So we'll have doses. In terms of individuals, as of yesterday, it had reached just over 8,240,000. So we are optimistic that by the end of this week, we should be able to reach 9 million individuals. In terms of possibility of 60%, it would mean that at the minimum, if we could be able to reach something close to 1.2 million vaccinations per week, we would be able to cover quite close to 70% by middle of December, if everything remains equal and if we can increase our capacity to something like a minimum of 1,200,000 in 7 days. So we don't think it's task impossible. The bigger issue is going to be, can we keep the momentum and the enthusiasm of South Africans? And as I already said, all of us will be, you know, required to play our role in that regard. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much indeed for your presentation. Let me just list the Honorable Member in sequence of their time that they would have posted their request to speak. Number one will be esteemed Honorable Member Dr. Jacobs. Number two will be esteemed Honorable Member Gwakube. Number three will be Honorable Member, esteemed Honorable Member Ishmael, and will be followed by esteemed Honorable Member Van Staden. And number five will be Honorable Member, esteemed Honorable Member Chirwa. Number six will be esteemed Honorable Member Sokacha. Number seven will be esteemed Honorable Dr. Temba Gwayo. Number eight will be esteemed Honorable Member Sukers, and that will be followed by esteemed Honorable Member Wilson. And after that, it will be esteemed Honorable Member Imam Sheikh, and will be followed by esteemed Honorable Member Gela. And last person will be esteemed Honorable Member Dr. Harvard. If there's any Honorable Member that would have missed, you may please indicate now before I could allow the first member to speak. It seems it's quiet. May I please invite esteemed Honorable Member Dr. Jacob to ask a clarifying question or make some comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the Minister and the team who came to present to us this evening. We appreciate it very much. And of course, it's the first engagement we're having with you since you've been appointed, and all the necessary accolades were given to you, and we were welcome to this platform, Minister, and so also for our Deputy Minister. We also appreciate the opportunity to listen to the vaccine update. We can also see that it is a very dynamic process. It's changing all the time, in the sense that new targets are set. There are old targets too. But it is very good to see how the department and yourselves can move with the need that arises as we go forward. Of course, we understand that vaccination is the ultimate means that we've been able to save our people and the population. And the drive is to get all of our people vaccinated, especially the minimum target of 40 million people. And so therefore we can see the changes. We also appreciate the fact that the 18 to 34 year olds would start registering and being vaccinated past Friday. And we are very encouraged by the numbers which are shown by yourselves. Of course, we're hoping for those numbers of that particular group to be higher, because we'd like them to be able to show the older members of our society that they have faith in the vaccines, and that they'd also be able, once they are vaccinated, to take their family members, especially the older family members, as put in your presentation, for them to be able to access vaccination. So all of your efforts which you are making in terms of your strategy, and you know, I like the way that you have named this. You're calling it demand generation. And under that, you have a number of subheadings, your high program viability, visibility, information sharing, your local media, attention to local media, local mobilization and canvassing, access strategies, etc. And it seems like it's going to be a very big campaign. Of course, we know that watching this play out in terms of your presentation, that you're quite capable to do this campaign and to be able to bring that difference to people's lives. We see two-thirds of Gauteng having received a second dose of Pfizer, but only 50% in the Western Cape, so we are a bit concerned. We need this to happen all over. What I do see, though, what you were referring to, a decrease in the uptake, it seems to have happened at Limpopo also, and that's why you were putting it as having been in all provinces. And then, therefore, it is understandable, this demand generation program that you are developing. I only have one question with regards to that. And the question is, of course, the how, and I don't think the how is that difficult, because where there is a will, there is always a way. But I would think at the end, you should also be able to tell us where the money would come from for such a big program. Thank you once again, and thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
May I please allow esteemed Honourable Member Gwahube?
Thank you, Chairperson. A number of questions on my side. I think that both the Minister and his team can perhaps, you know, admit that communication and particularly community outreach in this stage of the vaccine rollout has been less than ideal. I mean, when I read the presentation that's been presented by Dr. Chris this evening, I mean, while there are some commendable sort of campaigns that will be rolled out, including the very good transport initiative, the reality is that it seems to me it has been a little bit delayed. And this is something that we should have started and began with right at the beginning, when we realized that the numbers or the uptake of the over 60s was dropping. Because, of course, we always knew that it is the over 60s that would be more at risk to putting the health system at risk or at, under pressure. And so one would have assumed that a more aggressive approach would have been used to reach those people and get them to turn up. And so, I mean, now what it seems to me is that there's going to need to be some kind of massive acceleration. Because, of course, the people who are between the ages of under 35 are not going to be the people who are going to shift the dial in terms of ensuring that there is no pressure on the health system. And so the people that we still need to reach are definitely the people who are more at risk and who have hectic comorbidities. And so that's the one comment, because I think it is something that the department has had, must admit to. And it was also just important to, and it was also quite disturbing to read in the Sunday Times about 2 weeks ago, Dr. Chris having been on record saying that the department does not have an in-house comms budget, and that it would have to rely on sort of generic government comms for this kind of work. And the reality is that that surely cannot be, because this is a massive undertaking. You know, social media campaigns and influencers are not going to cut it if you're going to be reaching people in far-flung areas. And so that's why the transport initiative is really welcomed. But I would like some clarity on the comment made about there being no comms budget in-house for the Department of Health, because then it begs the question, is this issue now linked to the reported digital vibes matter? Is that why there is no in-house budget in the department? Then I just also wanted to find out what mechanisms are put in place to follow up on those people who have registered but not have and have not come to get their jabs, since those details would be available. And I would also want to understand what is happening with the no-fault compensation fund. Reports have indicated that this fund hasn't quite been set up yet, and so I'd like to get some indication what's happening with that, and sort of what is the the process that is yet to be followed. And then on the last two questions, Chair, unrelated to this presentation. The one is, there have been reports that indicate, Minister Pasha, that the department is now commissioning another investigation into those who have been implicated, into those senior members of your team who have been implicated in the Digital Vibes, despite the fact that there has been an SIU investigation and an internal investigation in the department. Can we have comment on that? What is that about? Because surely there's enough at your desk and at your disposal to act against these senior officials. And lastly, will the minister condemn the actions of the MEC in KZN, who was seen partying up a storm without any regard for social distancing or masking or any of the non-pharmaceutical interventions needed? MEC Simelane Zulu was reported over the weekend having hosted a party. And will the minister condemn such actions from a member of his team? Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, esteemed Honourable Member Ishmael.
Good evening, Chair. Good evening, everybody, and thank you for the presentation. I just have three questions. One, what plan does the department have to ensure that people do not fraudulently produce and sell vaccine certificates? My second question, 4.8 million people have been fully vaccinated. The goal was to vaccinate 41 million by the end of 2021. You know, but we did not even come close with regards to registration of vaccinations. What is government doing to counter the anti-vax movement? And my last question, the goal now is demand generation. Now, where will the money for all these billboards, etc., come from? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ishmael. Now, it is my privilege to invite esteemed Honorable Member Van Staden.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I have just some few discussions I think we must discuss this evening. First of all, I'm overwhelmed about the 832,000 people in the 18 to 34-year-old age group that is now registered since Friday. I think it's astonishing. I agree. We must take vaccinations to the people, and it is welcomed that vaccinations are now open for all. It is something that I've asked for this in this committee to happen at the end of June. Earlier this year. We need to hunt down this virus. I think at this stage, and this is a suggestion that mobile clinics should be also be implemented to help in this matter. And I think at this stage, communication is a big problem from government side, that my colleague just touched on it. I think at this stage, it's not up to standard and that there's a lack of budget at this moment. And this was also confirmed in the Sunday Times report a few weeks back. And certainly, Digital Vibe certainly has taken its toll in this matter. More must be done. However, I am worried when I hear the words compulsory, and I think we must discuss it tonight, or mandatory vaccinations. We must remember that compulsory vaccinations against COVID-19 cannot be allowed, as it is every person's free will and choice to take a vaccine or not to take it. So getting the COVID-19 jab cannot allow it to become mandatory. We can, under no circumstances, may the state or government attempt to compel or force anyone to be vaccinated. You must remember, Chairperson and Honourable Minister, that not everyone at this stage can take the vaccine right away, because there are patients with severe underlying diseases who first have to undergo a lot of medical examinations to see if they are able to take the vaccine. I, for instance, is one of them. Now, if people are unable to take the vaccine due to underlying disease conditions, won't the state or government discriminate against these people? Health services, in my view, cannot be denied to anyone if they do not want to take the vaccinations. It will be unconstitutional. I understand the frustrations of medics and scientists and health professionals around COVID-19 and people who have not yet taken the vaccine, but refusing health services to anyone may not happen under any circumstances. This cannot be allowed. In fact, no services can be denied to anyone that have not taken the vaccine. And if this is allowed, then there is a lot of sections in the Constitution of South Africa that will not be only broken, but also violated. And you can, in all of that sections, you can look at two, which is very important in this matter, section 12 of the Constitution, as well as section 27. So we must be very careful what we are doing and what we are propagating. My concern is if a professor in South Africa is making announcements in the media that he has made, that was made on the channel ENCA on the 23rd of August this year, but the government is encouraged to force people to take the vaccinations. This will, Honorable Chair and Minister, violate the Constitution in all its forms. And also the announcement of the same time of the MEC of Health and Limpopo that said that liquor traders should refuse to sell alcohol to unvaccinated customers. I think this sort of announcements cannot be allowed, especially from government leaders. I plead that we must be very careful of the implications of such opinions and announcements, and we must remember that people's freedom of choice may not be undermined in this matter in any way. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much indeed, esteemed Honorable Member Chirwa.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you to the Minister and his team for the presentation. I also have a few questions and comments. And firstly, I want to speak on the issue of vaccine hesitancy. I feel there isn't enough admission by the NDOH that it also, by a great margin, falls squarely on their feet. Because part and parcel of vaccine hesitancy is issues of trust, is an issue of a weak communication strategy. And even the oversight to Gauteng in the past day was proof of that, even though we commended the work they were doing in regards to spreading the word and sending the right information, there isn't enough being done reaching people at their point of living, and not just at taxi ranks. I mean, if you put up posters at the taxi ranks, with our unemployment rates, you're only speaking to people who use taxis and not necessarily the vast majority of young people who are trapped in their townships and rural areas with hopelessness and no prospect of ever going into the city using a taxi because they are not working. So there has to be committed effort to reach people in their immediate communities. And that is not yet being done by the department. And that is also a very big reason why vaccine hesitancy is also thriving to such a great extent. I mean, even amongst circles of people who have knowledge, it becomes the case. And there isn't enough investment in the fundamental hesitancy or crisis of hesitancy. The issues, the trust issues that a large group of South Africans have against the government of the day are not being addressed with honesty. There isn't a single project in the NDOH that you have spearheaded since for two decades, almost three, that you have done successfully, reaching all your targets that you set for yourself. And I say this a lot because I need you to see how the rest of the country sees you. They see you as failures. And you can't trust failures with your life. And you must address the trust issues that people have with an honesty and admittance of your previous failures and how you cannot be making the same mistakes like you did during the HIV denialism era and so on and so forth, like you are doing currently with mental health issues. There has to be much more intentional work, real groundwork that is being done to ensure that people have quality access to quality healthcare that is not yet being done. And I mean, the issue of vaccine hesitancy, for example, was raised in this portfolio committee on the 10th of February in this year. That's like six months ago. And there were recommendations that were done on how to strengthen your communications, how to strengthen the issue of stigmas arising, how to roll down information into remote communities, into rural areas, into informal settlements and township areas. And that work has still not been done, quite frankly, 6 months down the line after you received recommendations from this very portfolio committee. So there has to be an admittance of how you've dragged your feet as well in addressing this. Granted, your strategy to reach out to the youth on social media is actually a good point, but it is not enough. It is not enough because not everybody who has access to social media or the internet has consistent access and will not necessarily go to the content that you are giving people or will even mute for that matter, anything that has to do with these particular things. So you have to meet people where they are consistently and constantly, not just with one influencer or two or five, for that matter, who are not engaging people at the level of their trust issues that they are raising, and not just throwing around threats, you know, and sanitizing threats with, yeah, if there's no vaccination, this is going to happen, this is what's happening in other countries. And even those narratives are not being addressed by the NTOH, causing more resistance from the very same people who are anti-vax. You don't address anti-vax narratives by ignoring them or threatening them or simply not engaging them at their point of need. And I feel that the department has largely failed on this particular point because it's something that's doable. And number two, even during our oversight visit, there was a stark difference in your vaccination sites in township areas and those in suburban areas. And that is a concern I want to raise very strongly, in particular with Alex, because that's the community healthcare center we went to. But it is a general thing, generally. Township facilities, you should know this, clinics, hospitals and stuff like that in townships and rural areas are marginalized and not taken care of, as are the ones in suburbs and maybe private healthcare, which we also subsidize, by the way. So I'm mentioning them knowing that we also subsidize the private sector. For example, even a small thing as choice, which vaccine to take. At Houghton, people stand in the queue, they are vaccine of choice. At Alex Community Healthcare Center, people are the nurses told us, the management at that hospital told us straight to our faces that they choose for the people because they have an instruction to balance out demand for both vaccines. And I don't think that's something that should be let go of, because it's not happening in elite communities. Why are you choosing for people in township areas which vaccine to take? Doesn't that fuel hesitancy? If you go to Alex as a young person looking for Pfizer and then you're told, no, you must take J&J, it's an instruction and you can't take anything else, the person is going to turn back and go back home. And then it's counted as vaccine hesitancy when areas, it's people's agency and consent and right to choice being thwarted upon by a state facility that is meant to ensure that access to quality healthcare and choice are things that are being held up very high. And this also trickles out to other aspects of the public health, like contraceptives. Women don't have the liberty to choose which contraceptive they want. They tell you at contact level that Depo Provera is the only contraceptive we have at the womb clinic, or something like that. And those are things that are not being addressed properly. Even the issue of men and healthcare, I feel there's a dishonesty in our conversation of how we are addressing this. It's not a new thing that men and South African men and healthcare is a crisis on its own. And it was bound to catch up with the NDOH, with the COVID pandemic, because it's something that you have not addressed adequately and fundamentally at ground level, even historically. We saw this again with the HIV dialysis era, and even to date, quite frankly, there are still instances where men don't go to test for HIV and test through people's bodies. And there isn't work that is being done by the NTOH to undo the shackles of what patriarchy does and affects men in regards to their health care. You're not investing yourself in the necessary work of engaging people face-to-face and giving them knowledge at their point of need and where they reside. Spreading the gospel amongst people who are already lobbied into the idea of vaccinations and healthcare is not doing the work. You're speaking to people who are already lobbied. People who are willing to give an ear to the NDOH, to your press briefings, are people who are already clued up, who want to know more about the process, and not necessarily people who already have a distrust for the NDOH. And you must start thinking of strategies on how to reach people who are not even trying to listen to you as the NTOH or anything that has to do with you and their healthcare. And then we'll be talking. And lastly, I want to ask about DDG and Ben Pillay, if he's still serving in the NTOH and what his current role is following his direct involvement in the Digital Vibes cash heist as per the SIU investigation report. I want to know, what have been the repercussions of officials that have been found to have been involved? Are they still there? There isn't much that's being said on what the NTOH or the minister has done to work in resolving the crisis of corruption and digital vibes, cash heist that happened in front of all our eyes, especially in this portfolio committee? Are we still going to be subjected to his presentations after that whole debacle and an entire minister having to resign? So I just want an update on what have been the steps that have been taken by the minister and in addressing officials that were directly involved in the digital vibes cash heist. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much indeed, esteemed Honorable Sokacha.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Sorry for not putting on my video. I'm at home in Richmond in the village, so it's going to be much more difficult for me to put on my video. And let me also take this opportunity and wish our new minister, Minister Pahla, very well in the department. He has been there. He knows the in and ups and the up and downs of the department. And also wish our DM also well. I'm sure they will make a formidable team. They used to work together. It's not something new for them. And also thank the DG and the team and Dr. Crisp, who has been presenting the report. Chair, just a few things, very short. I've listened quite with interest when Dr. Crisp was mentioning the last three slides, the one on the program visibility, the second one around putting information into the hands of the people, and then the one of local media. And I have concerns, Chair, on those slides. They put, everything quite correctly and so on. But I was looking at the radical biasness towards our people in the villages. I know we as a department, they have gotten a nice experience of Limpopo, which has been doing very well in our villages and so on. So I just want to request from the DM and the minister to look at provinces like the Northern Cape. I'm talking from experience that in the Northern Cape, we've got a lot of villages that struggle a lot with water and most other services and so on. And during that time when I was MEC, the Honorable Chairperson, sorry to refer to it, but I refer to it because I still regarded that program as being outstanding during those years. The mines donated to the Northern Cape a lot of mobile units. And those mobile units, during the peak of HIV and AIDS, those mobile units went into the villages with a basket of health services, the dental ward, your screening of your, high blood pressure, and so on. But that program worked well when people went for testing for HIV and AIDS in the villages. The mobile goes there, it stands for some days in a village, it moves to the next village. Our people were able to go to the mobile unit and be assisted. Now, on what Dr. Chris has presented on these three slides, only here talks about tribal, leadership, talks about faith-based organizations, the ZCC. He talks about home vaccinations, and he also mentioned the critical issue of people being transported in these rural areas. It's more linked to what the Honorable Skiro have said. So mine is the biasness and the radical, biasness towards our people in the village. I'm not a scientist, I'm not a doctor, but I know the issue of culture, it's much more 51% than women at 61% that are vaccinated. It might affect those in the villages, how stubborn our own culture is. My own culture is as stubborn it is in terms of men. When a man has said something, it's the alpha and the omega. So I'm checking with the minister and the DM, what is the possibility of the department looking at mobile units that can assist with these villages? I know in the Northern Cape we were there at Kuruman. I saw a lot of mobile units standing there, idling there, no more in use. And those mobile units have been denoted by the mines, by Kumba, by them. And they did an outstanding job in the Northern Cape situation in the villages. So that's for the minister and the DM to look at the possibility of areas like the Northern Cape, vast rural areas, for those mobile units to assist. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
I'm
going to allow you, esteemed Honourable Member Dr. Tembekwayo. I wanted to make one comment that there's nothing wrong, esteemed Honourable Member Sokacha, to indicate that you are former MEC of Health in that specific area. There's nothing wrong with that. May I have a privilege now to invite esteemed Honourable Member Dr. Tembekwayo to take the platform.
Thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity, and thank you, Minister, and the entourage for the update so far. I've got only two questions, and the first one is based on there are a lot of families that have lost their loved ones due to COVID. So what I want to ask is, have your office been approached by the families on matters of compensation? And if so, how many have approached you, and what is it that that has been done about that issue? And the second one is based on the matter of vaccination of the 17-year-olds and below, because there are lots of learners who are identified as associates of those that tested positive. And they are asked to go on quarantine for 10 days. And during those 10 days period, they lose a lot of the teaching periods. So my question is, how far are you with the preparation or maybe the identification of the correct vaccine that can be given to this age group? Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. May I please have the privilege to invite esteemed member, Honorable Sukers.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to thank the department for the update. I have a few questions that I want to ask. The first is, I have been covered by Honorable Siviwe Kwarube, but I also want to ask what the current status is of the no-fault compensation fund, and if the department can please provide us with details around that. Then Gauteng has sent out a COVID-19 community vaccination assessment survey. The survey asked, among other things, about the intention to be vaccinated. I want to ask the department, are other provinces doing the same, and how many people have indicated in this and in other government surveys that they intend being vaccinated? Then, Chairperson, I have been notified of staff being moved from other services to cover vaccine sites. What impact this is having on primary care services? I want to ask the department whether they are monitoring this. We are receiving reports on how other areas are being affected, other services at the primary care level. And if so, what steps are the department taking to ensure that these areas does not continue suffering? Then in terms of the communication strategy, we certainly need to sit here today and note the difference in speed, momentum that is being given to communication now. The question that must be asked, however, is who are the service providers that are being used, and what are the costs of this? Then I also want to ask the department, the minister, both the minister and our deputy minister are both medical doctors. So I just need to know, there are many people like myself who had COVID twice. Could the department comment on natural immunity and provide clarity to workplaces, especially that are enforcing guidelines on vaccinations? Could they give clarity on natural immunity and consideration for that? Then I also, just in support of what was raised very importantly by Honorable Van Staden and alluded to by Honorable Chirwa, the considerations around the constitutional rights of people and the threats that are being made, especially in workplaces. What is the department doing concerning that? Because we as Parliament need to have a discussion around the constitutional rights of people when it comes to health rights and freedom of choice where vaccines are concerned. Those are my questions, Chair. Thank you.
Honourable, esteemed Honourable Member Wilson, if you may proceed, please.
Good evening and thank you, Chair. First of all, may I extend my congratulations to Dr. Parler and Dr. Dlomo on your appointments as Minister and Deputy Minister. It's nice to have somebody from the home front there, Dr. Parler. Viva Limpopo, viva. And Dr. Dlomo, you will be missed. I think in principle I've been covered in the main by colleagues who've asked questions ahead of me, so I will keep mine short. My first question goes around statistics, particularly in deaths of vaccinated people versus unvaccinated people. Now, we know that vaccinated people can still get COVID and that they are going to show the symptoms, but I think very important, and particularly when it comes to anti-vaxxers and the vaccine hesitancy, that we highlight what the statistics are of people who've had the vaccination and recovered from COVID without any of the ventilation, oxygen, ICUs and deaths. That to me is very important. My understanding from what I have read just recently is that the majority of people who have been vaccinated, who have subsequently got COVID, have made fast recoveries, and at this stage we're showing very few or no deaths as a result of people being vaccinated, whereas people who haven't been vaccinated are 100 times more, and these are my figures, please don't quote me, are 100 times more vulnerable. And I think that kind of information in the public domain is exceptionally important. We know that there's vaccine hesitancy. We can understand some of the reasons why. There are anti-vaxxers who are not helping us. But I think if people get a real picture and a real feel for the consequences of not being vaccinated, that will assist in going forward to get more people vaccinated. And obviously community immunity, or herd immunity, I prefer community immunity, is vital and very, very critical. And while I understand that there is a bit of vaccine hesitancy, there are people who are desperate to get vaccinated. And I want to talk specifically about foreign nationals who are currently legally residing in South Africa. They are human. They are vulnerable to COVID. They can die in the same way as any other South African is. Many of these are here legally. They have their work permits. They have their residence permits. And they are part of a community. And getting them immunized for community immunity also becomes vitally important. And stopping them potentially spreading it onto other people is also important. So we are getting a lot of calls from people, foreign nationals who are here legally, who've got all the paperwork, who've got all the documentation, who would like to be vaccinated, and yet they are being turned away from vaccination sites. And I find this concerning because this is not going to help us with community immunity. Our communities are not just South Africans. There are a lot of foreign nationals in the country as well. What are we going to do about addressing this? I do believe that this is important. And for me, it is a very, very sad day when a brave woman who has come forward and exposed the PPE corruption that was going on in Gauteng, and who is a key witness to the case there, gets gunned down outside her home. I find it very disturbing. I cannot believe that we as a country have come to this, and it does affect us because she was part and parcel of what we do. She was brave and she was courageous, and from our side, we pray that her soul rests in peace and that we are with their families, because nobody should be shot down in this country for exposing the kind of corruption that was going on in this department. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much indeed. May I please invite esteemed member, honourable member, Sheikh Imam.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Allow me to congratulate you on your appointment as the acting chairperson, but also allow me to congratulate the minister and the deputy ministers on their promotions. Indeed, I think it will augur well for the department, no doubt about that. And I want to start off at that point, and I didn't really realize until Honorable Wilson said to us now what the position is. How disappointing, somebody that goes out there, which we call a whistleblower, and we've been told that there's going to be more protection for them, is gunned down in that fashion just because she wants to do the right thing. And I hope, sincerely hope, I was hoping that it was not all about that, but obviously I was wrong. But it clearly indicates, the high levels of corruption and how people are connected in this world. But the first question I have is for the minister. Minister, when you started off the presentation, you spoke about fake social media and fake news. I'd like you to explain what in your understanding is fake news. Anything that either your department or the pharmaceutical companies or SAPRA, if you don't agree with that, is that fake news? And if the other people say the same thing that you people are giving fake news, how do you deal with that? How do you establish, Cypher, that this is fake news or not fake news? Because we must admit, Minister, there are health experts and scientists that are saying the opposite of what the Department of SAPRA is. Now, don't get me wrong. I've taken the vaccine. I've taken both. I've taken it on your advice. If anything goes wrong, my people are coming to you. But be that as you say, Minister, my problem is, why do we want to suppress those people that might have a different view? They must be allowed to give their view. What you need in this country right now, with all the anti-vax news that's going on and about ivermectin, some are giving positive news, some are giving negative. Should your department, together with your loyal SAPRA, not enter into some deliberation with these people that got a different view, so that we, the public, thank you, Chairperson, and we, the public, can then get a clear understanding of what is going on. You can't blame people that know nothing about health for the way they behave at the moment and don't want to vaccinate. And think, not that they don't want to. With the news, can you imagine an expert and a scientist, minister, coming and saying you won't live 2 years? Now, what makes you believe that we should not be listening to a scientist who's been right in the Pfizer laboratory saying? So you can't blame the people. And I want to reiterate the reason why you have vaccines available today, because a very large percentage of those age groups, 60 and over and just under, have not been taken. That's why you have so much available, and now you bring it down and down and down. I don't have a problem with it. Vaccines have always worked. What I'm not sure is going to work here is because this was done over a couple of months. You don't even know enough about the virus and its variant, whether it's going to. So based on that, my first question is, what is the actual efficacy rate at the moment of both the Pfizer and the Johnson vaccines at the moment? Because I've heard that right now it's gone down to 17%. So even if 17% is going to be saved and helped, I don't have a problem. Better 17% than that. But I'd like you to tell us, is it true that it's now gone right down to 17%? That's the first thing. The second thing is that I have a problem with is, there are certain doctors and medical experts in this country that are making statements that you are trying to suppress them and threatening them with action and removing their license, like the Dr. Foster. Can we not give these people a voice? That's my other problem that I have. Now, the other thing is that I want to know, can you explain the rationale behind going for Johnson & Johnson? Who entered into the agreement with Johnson & Johnson? Who negotiated with Johnson & Johnson and not the others? Wherein we are told that the others have a much higher efficacy rate when it started, that is, of 97% to 61%. Why would you choose that instead of the other one? So that's the other question I want. Now, the other thing is why did your department in the first place, and I know, Minister, you were not able to put it, why did you go about procuring vaccines for this country without SEPRA having approved it? And that's a clear, that is 100% what I'm telling you is the fact. You went and procured, you didn't even apply for a Section 21, nothing at that. Now, the other thing that I've heard and I want to confirm, that there's no more herd immunity as far as this vaccine. Everybody that's taking it, in terms of those that are pro-vaccine, are saying it is going to help those that take it and nobody else, not the people around. So now the first argument we heard, that if we get 60% vaccinated, we have herd immunity, we are fine. Now, is that still going to work or not? Because now we are told it, this is not going to give you herd immunity at all. But it's going to help everybody. So important, if it works, all of us must take it. So I'd like you to actually comment on that. Then I don't want to go much further than that, other than to ask you, would you agree with me, Minister, that if you take monies, anybody that takes money from somebody, and that is an interested party like the pharmaceutical company or World Health Organization or Bill Gates, are you able to be absolutely objective in terms of products that they are for and you may think it may not work? I just want you to tell me whether one can be absolutely objective or not in terms of that. Then there's a one problem that I want to highlight, Chairperson, which has nothing to do with the vaccine. The Western Cape's got a serious problem in terms of people that are dying of COVID. There is not enough emergency services or paramedics to go there and certify these people dead. And bodies are starting to, you know, smell, if that's the term I should use, because of the delay. But lastly, I want to ask the Minister, in the interest of the country and the health of those people, would your department be willing to engage with those experts and health scientists and things who also studied like all the others, yourself and others did? Would you be willing to enter into an engagement and let us get both these views? If yes, we'd like to know when. If no, we'd like to know why not. Will you engage? Because what we've never found in this country is the both sides coming to a common platform and being able to give us, deliberate on it, so that then can convince the South African public that indeed we are in good hands and the right. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Before I call upon esteemed Honorable Gela and esteemed Honorable Dr. Harvard, esteemed Honorable Sheikh Imam, I don't want to stifle debate as the chair. My role is to facilitate debate so that esteemed Honorable Member can say whatever that they want and seek some clarity, seeking question from the ministry. However, during when you elect me as acting chairperson, you requested that I should continue two things. Continue to invite the ministry to do some briefing on update on vaccine. That is done today. You also said I should be able to invite SEPRA to clarify issues on the some of the progress of the issues. At the end of this meeting, the secretary will announce you when are we meeting SEPRA. And remember, I'm the acting chair. I'm sure even the new chairperson that will be elected would also take over the mandate of this portfolio committee. I'm trying to say that there are questions that I believe they could be clarified, especially that have to do with SAPRA. By SAPRA, because we have a date with them. Not a date with them, there's a date in which we have invited them. But I'm not saying the ministry should not reply on what they know. But I wanted to advise you that the secretary will clarify this point before the ministry respond as to what date is SAPRA is coming, on and the basis in which they were invited. And I'm sure the secretary will clarify. But let me allow, she will do so before the ministry or the department give some response to clarity-seeking question and comments made. May I please, with all due respect, invite esteemed honorable member, Gela.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join my honorable members by congratulating our new minister of our portfolio and the deputy minister, and also thank them for briefing us. I know, Chairperson, that as portfolio committee members, every fortnight or 2 weeks we get briefing on vaccine rollout as a portfolio committee members. And we really appreciate that as members. And I'm also very happy to see the report, Chairperson, and I welcome the briefing, Chairperson. I'm very happy to see the number of registrations of the 18 to 34 years old age group. I'm also encouraged that the department is looking broad and wide to come up with a new strategies to motivate people to have themselves vaccinated. In addition, Chairperson, additionally, the registration in the workplaces are to be commended. Can you give us an idea of how many people are registered and receiving vaccines in the workplace? Can you also give us an idea of the sectors you are using for that? That will be my. But also, Chairperson, I'm very happy that we did oversight. I know that you are still going to give us an opportunity as portfolio members to talk about our oversight visit in these two provinces. But I must say, Chairperson, we have seen actually what is happening, and also a particular in Gauteng. But I must say, I was very happy and to see that at least there is also an improvement in some of the areas. And also, I'm happy to see that they also have a drive-through vaccine site in Gauteng, which is something that I think even other provinces must also do that. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
May I please invite esteemed honorable member, Dr. Hubbard? Honorable Dr. Hubbard.
Yes, Chair. Can I just a little bit mistalk or not talk today? I'm just feeling a little bit headache.
Oh, you are not feeling well?
Yes, because this morning I come here all the way not feeling well. Yes.
Yes, we wish you a speedy.
Okay.
No problem. Let us allow.
Yeah, tomorrow. Thank you.
No, don't worry. Let us allow the ministry to respond. And at the end, I'll try to summarize all the critical issues that the honorable members would have raised for positive consideration by ministry going forward beyond the response. Thank you very much, May I please invite the minister?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'll touch on a few, and then I'm sure the team members will fill in, and if there is still some gaps between myself and Deputy Minister Dlomo, we can fill up. I think on the issues of budgets, what is the situation, there are a few people who raised the issue about, especially on our ability to communicate. I think DG and the team will be able to respond to that. The outreach programs, honorable members, we accept the criticism that some of this we could have done much earlier. But as we indicate, you know, every time as we build capacity, we had to start with, first of all, in terms of the available vaccines. If you honorable members will remember, when we started, we had limited stock from the J&J third phase trial, which we used the Sisonke program, and as the supplies of what we had procured started coming, we had more stock, and therefore we were able to increase capacity in terms of fixed sites. And as we started to saturate, and that's why we then built more capacity to get even go out, because we needed to be sure, firstly, that we're using existing facilities, especially the fixed facilities, and especially your healthcare service facilities. Once we could see that those are saturated, then the issue of going out and even outreach in terms of transport, you know, had to come in. Maybe while still there, Chair, let me just update you to say that it is indeed quite promising, because when I started, I did indicate that we are hoping in a very few days or to can pass the 11 million in terms of doses administered. I've just been updated that as of this afternoon, we have passed 11 million of doses administered. And what is also encouraging is that the uptake seems to be, again, steadily rising. Yesterday, we had administered 247,000 and plus a little over that. Today, we at 267,000. So that is very encouraging. So as this capacity to do more, then and we roll out more ability also to reach out to communities. You know, we'll accept the criticism, but the fact of the matter is that as you build your capacity, then you explore even more opportunities, and that's what we are doing, because the fixed sites still remain, but we're also going out. Dr. Chris, I'm sure, will deal with the issue of what happens when people register and don't come back. DG, I'm sure, the no fault. There were a few questions on no fault. The question from Honorable Kwakhube about another investigation into the procurement of digital vibes, I can assure you that there is no such further investigation. As you would know, there was an internal investigation, then an SIU investigation. So there is no further investigation except for those. And the issue from Honorable Kwakhube about MEC for KZN, well, first of all that I know is what Honorable Kwakhube has mentioned, that there's a report in the media. So even in terms of maybe raising the matter with my colleague there, you know, that's far I don't know the facts except what is in the media. And I'm sure the Honorable Member would also know that the MEC reports to the Premier. So if there is any the veracity of the allegation, and if something has to be done, I'm sure the Premier of KZN will be able to take whatever steps if there is necessity. First of all, verify the information, and then I'm sure he will decide if there's any steps to be taken. the fraud, I mean, sorry, the fraud in terms of possible fraud, Honorable Ishmael, about vaccine certificate. First of all, we have not reached the stage where we have actually decided that we need to issue vaccine certificates. It's a matter which is still being discussed. There is an understanding that going forward, we might need this to be done in terms of, because there's a possibility that going forward, for instance, with traveling, that there might be that situation where a number of countries start to demand. Currently, when people travel, what is demanded is proof of having tested negative. You have to produce a recent PCR, or some countries accept even a rapid antigen test. Those are the certificates which are required. But there is an expectation that for various reasons going forward, there might be a need for this. So it's a matter which we're still examining. And the vaccine interministerial committee is still to receive guidance in terms of whether we need to go this route. Now, in terms of whether we will be able to reach our target of a population or a community immunity or herd immunity, we remain positive, as I've said just now, if we are able to sustain interest as it has shown. We know that Dr. Chris did mention about 2 weeks ago when we had a low supply, it did affect the ability to attract people because some people went to some sites and could not get vaccinated. But since we have now have the confidence of people going and even when they're in big numbers, they still get vaccinated, I think the confidence is coming back. And of course, with the opening up, that's why we see the numbers going up. So we hope that with improved communication as well, we'll be able to sustain the demand. Question of whether we have the necessary funding, again, I'm sure it will be tackled by the DG and other managers. I think, yeah, Honorable Van Staden also raised the issue of budget. But on the issue of mandatory vaccination, this is not a policy of government. Honorable members would remember quite early the president emphasized that we are approaching this on a voluntary basis. The question is, however, being raised by various commentators, including especially in terms of workplaces, what would be the position? I mean, in the workplace, if I know that some private institutions, I'm sure some of the members of the management of the department may know better. I was told that one of the private schools has already issued a circular for their teachers to get vaccinated or risk losing their jobs. Now, the question, but that's not a government policy. So it's a matter which is coming forward. A lot of commentators are saying we may need to do that. And I was asked just two times yesterday by two, in two interviews by two different news channels. And my response was that it's not our policy. The president has declared the policy quite clearly. If there is need for review, it will have to be properly reviewed. At this stage, it is not. And I also said that my understanding from our policy currently is that we prefer that we should convince people to come forward and take the vaccine. So if there's got to be a review, so there's no need for alarm. As to whether private institutions can declare their own policy, again, that would be subject to a challenge, probably legally, by those who may feel hard done by those demands by certain employers or businesses. On the issue, Honorable Chair, in terms of whether people can choose their own vaccination, just in terms of where we come from, we didn't have the luxury of saying that people should choose because, as you know, this has been a scarce commodity. So whatever was available, whatever was approved by various regulators, including our own, proven to be efficient, I mean, the efficacy and safety, whatever we could lay our hands, having qualified in terms of efficacy and safety and registered. Once we were able to acquire those, we then made those available. As you would know, we started with AstraZeneca, there were problems, went to J&J, there were clots and other things which came in, some people clotting, and then there was contamination. So we didn't have the luxury of choosing. So, but our main approach was that because J&J is a one dose, we should prioritize it for rural areas where people travel long distances so that they come once. And in the urban areas where there are shorter distances, we should prioritize Pfizer. But we use J&J for groups of where we're vaccinating in groups, like health workers. It was the only one available at the time. And for teachers, because we had a supply of an adequate number of vaccines, which also were having a short lifespan, and was therefore the best for a group vaccination. But beyond that, we really depend on availability.
Sorry, Minister. Honorable Imam Sheikh, please mute your mic. Thank you. You may proceed.
So we depend on availability, but the team can also. But we are quite confident that down the line, when we have a lot more variety and in abundance where it might be possible, we're not ruling it out. It's not a policy to say there will never be choice. But at the present moment, we don't have that luxury. But it's not to say, I'm aware that in some sites where people have been able to be supplied with both J&J and Pfizer currently, which are the two, some people have been given the luxury to choose. But it's not everywhere because we are not able to supply every site with both. The Honorable Sokacha, I can assure you that already, I believe, even in the Northern Cape, I know in all the provinces, the outreach and mobile are already happening, but we will follow up with our colleagues in the Northern Cape to make sure that those facilities must be used optimally. So we will definitely be following up. Honorable Tembekwayo, on the compensation for families which have lost loved ones, this is a very difficult period. I think all of us have, relatives and close friends and colleagues who have passed away. But in terms of whether there's compensation, remember the no-fault compensation we're talking about is currently in terms of adverse effects on following vaccination, if those adverse effects may qualify for permanent disability and therefore require compensation. But in terms of deaths from COVID itself, at this stage, we don't have any such a scheme. And I would imagine that that would be quite difficult because, this being in a way qualifying under natural causes. I just imagine that I'm not aware of even any country currently in the world which has got a scheme to compensate citizens who pass away as a result of this disease. A vaccination of below 17. Currently, I think there's work which is being done in various countries the manufacturers. I know that in some countries like the US, they have already been vaccinating below 18. So one is the conditions of approval. Most of these vaccines are only approved for adults 18 years plus, but where there's been further trials to see whether they are safe for below 18. I'm sure it's something we'll look at. But even if that does come through, it would not really be our immediate priority because the risks are lower for below 18. So because as many members said earlier on, the main thing is to cover those who are extremely vulnerable, which we know it's age related. And lower than 18, the risks of serious illness and death are lower. Honorable Sukers, I think the no-fault compensation DG and the team will take care of. The survey, I'm not aware, but again, DG can comment on that. What I know is that in our IMC, what has been requested is that the Minister of Science and Innovation should again approach the HSRC. HSRC did a study before, which had indicated upward of 60% of acceptance of vaccine. I think it was as high as about 65 or 67%. But with the concern that this seemed not to be materializing in terms of 65% of people turning up for vaccination, there was a view, it was a request to the minister that the HSRC should be asked to do a second round of the survey. So if Gauteng has done its own, that's good. But at this stage, I'm not aware of other provinces, but we also prefer a national survey. So I believe that we'll get the report from Minister of Science and Innovation on this matter. Other services affected, I'm sure, I know that our other services are struggling. Just last week when I was in Western Cape, they did mention that they are backwards by over 300,000 of planned operations, that planned surgeries, which have been which have been delayed over in the province. So we know that in terms of various other services, but I'll ask that one of the team members deal with that. In terms of natural immunity, freedom of choice, I've dealt with that. Honorable Wilson, the issue of, I agree with you that we need to get more of the scientific information because it is there in terms of how much lives are saved by vaccination. We did get a report from MRC, South African Medical Research Council, from the Sisonke vaccination program, because it's already over 4 months now. There are reports which they've compiled which show the safety. But we can also just say to you that, in fact, I think we agree with you. We must inform people more and more, because we know that since the vaccination, there are very few of the health staff who have fallen ill of COVID, and even less who have been seriously ill, requiring hospital or ICU. So the numbers are there, but also in general communities, even with educators, already there are numbers which indicate that since they've been vaccinated, there are less and less of teachers who are falling ill from COVID-19. And then for the national, as far as I'm concerned, but Dr. Chris will also come in there. As far as I know, the only struggle we're having is undocumented migrants. Anybody who has a document, a valid document, should be able to get vaccination. And I would be surprised if foreign nationals who are in the country with valid documents, why they would be left behind, because it shouldn't happen. Honorable Sheikh Imam had quite a lot, but I think that the gist of what Honorable Imam Sheikh Imam was saying, amongst others, well, just on the efficacy of Pfizer and J&J of 17%, I can say, clearly that information is false. I'll just ask one of the team members, maybe Dr. Pillay. While I'm talking about Dr. Anban Pillay, I can't remember who it was it Honorable Chira, who asked whether Dr. Anban Pillay was still part of the department. Definitely he is. I don't know. She seemed to have information which is it's ahead of many of us. But let me just say that whatever comes from the SIU, as it comes, everybody has their rights. So where there are allegations against staff members, they will be given a chance in the formal processes, because we are governed by laws and processes. So it doesn't happen that once there's allegations against you, we simply just say you are dismissed. So Dr. Pillay is part of the team which is with us, and he might want to say something about the efficacy, but definitely 17% is false. But just in terms of what is fake and whether we're going to give people who've got different views, why are we suppressing? Let me just say, honorable members, again, we're a country and many parts of the world are governed by procedures, by regulations. Nobody is suppressed, but as well, there are rules and regulations of engagement. In the science and medical world as well, there are rules of how, if if you say you are a scientist and you have particular information, to really go out into the public and propagate that information. There are systems. You need to research, you need to give proper reports, peer-reviewed research, and submit it to the relevant authorities. And therefore, this some of who are actually medical professionals. Indeed, I can confirm that we are looking at those who are registered professionals to test this with the authorities to which they are registered, because there are rules. As somebody who is registered as a medical practitioner, I can't just come across some plant and then start giving it to people, or whenever I get something, you know, if I'm in practice, licensed to practice. There are rules and regulations. So, because we know that most of the things with some of these, those of who are even professionals, is not being proven. If they've got information, they know how to go about proper research, peer review, submit it to proper to authorities who can validate their research, including, you know, whatever alternative remedies submitted to the relevant authorities, including SAPRA. And the claim that there is no more going to be population immunity, I think it's probably a misunderstanding of exactly what is being said. But I'll ask again Dr. Chris and Dr. Pillay Anban to just say something about that. Vaccine in workplaces, I think Dr. Kisna Stami will be able to say something. Can I get the Honourable Chair, with your permission, just ask DG to just confirm some of those who I thought might be able to deal with the others. DG, and then Dr. Jomo will also come in.
Thank you very much. You may proceed in that order, Honourable Minister, as per guide.
Sorry, Chair.
Thank you.
Chairperson.
Intervention.
Yes, Chair. It's just relating to Dr. Pala before he steps off. I just wanted to just get the understanding. Is he saying that only action will only be taken against senior members of the department once the SIU report has been made public? Or what is the stance here? Because I'm not quite understanding, considering that there is a report, both an internal departmental one and the SIU. So what are we exactly waiting for before action is taken? Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, let me handle this way. I thought
you
maybe
can respond, Chair, with your permission.
I thought maybe it's a point of order, Honourable Gwahube, now that you have asked. Not a problem, because the view that I have, with all due respect to all esteemed honourable members of portfolio committees, that I'm not going to allow for the second bite in the interest of time. But I'm sure you will answer that question as and when you conclude. You may do it now, Honourable Minister, Dr. Joe Patton.
Yeah, very straightforward, Chair. All that I want to assure Honourable Member is that the SIU, when it has made findings, they do refer matters. So at this stage, we do have some of the matters which they have referred to us to take action. So I'm just saying those matters which they have referred to us to take further action will follow proper labour relations processes. So the members will know when those labour relations actions are being taken. Let me just leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you. May we please allow is it the DG or?
Yes, Chair.
Please, okay. Chair, if you may proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thank you to the Honourable Minister and members. I will request that Dr. Chris comes in and deals with most of the technical questions, and then Dr. Pillay will come in after Dr. Chris. And then I will deal with one or few issues, and then we will then be done. Over to you, Dr. Chris, through your indulgence, Honourable Chair.
Yes, Dr. Chris, if you may.
Thank you very much, Chair, DG and Minister. Thank you. Thank you. Just a few questions, because the Honourable Minister has dealt with the vast majority, and I've got nothing to add to what he said to that. We are examining on an identity by identity basis people who have been registered and not vaccinated. We monitor regularly the comparison between the date of registration and the date of vaccination, partly to identify how many are walk-ins being registered on the same day as vaccination, and also to understand the limitations of the pre-registration options that are offered. I don't have the figures in front of me now, but we will certainly look for them. But it's the vast majority of people who register do come for vaccination. As far as the, I think the Honourable Minister has explained about the choice of vaccine, but just to say at the moment we have very limited number of Johnson & Johnson vaccines. But from, as I showed in the presentation, from the end of August we start to receive Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and should that supply improve, there will obviously be more sites that are able to have Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Just to add on the question of other services, there are a large number of other services, as the Honourable Minister said, that have suffered as a result of us moving resources, moving people mostly, to care for people with HIV. And this is exactly why we want to vaccinate people. Because the more people we have vaccinated, the greater protection, the less people are ill, the less they arrive in health services, and the less they're in hospital and end up in intensive care units, consuming more resources. So the faster we're able to vaccinate people, the quicker we will all be able to get back to proper and more coherent, especially chronic health programs and some of the other services that are have been compromised. As far as the communications, there were a couple of questions asked about the budgets for communications. So what we've done, because the amount of communication resources that is required for a campaign of this sort is so huge, we have partners in government, many other government departments, like the education department, who can talk to teachers and educate teachers, like the transport department, who can get involved, but primarily the GCIS, who has a fundamental communication role and certainly have more skilled people than we have on their team to manage communications. And then together with our department and GCIS and other departments, we have also teamed up with a number of private players from private trusts, but also the Solidarity Fund. And together we have a substantial program. And then from that program, which you should be, you already are beginning to see roll out, and it should gain momentum in the next week or two, from that program, private TV, radio, print media, and so on, have volunteered to come and use the materials that are, the technical materials that are created to prepare their own communication materials. So trying to put a budget to everything is a little bit difficult because there are so many contributors to it, but we are certainly trying to do that. I want to reiterate what the Minister, Honourable Minister, said about foreigners. If there are instances of foreign residents with foreign passports or foreign nationalities who are turned away from vaccination sites while they have any documentation at all, we would like to know about it, because that is not part of our policy at all, and we would like to intervene. We have heard one or two concerning reports, one on which we followed up. There was indeed some misunderstandings or aggression that was shown in the site. The other one was definitely nothing untoward that had happened. But anybody who is registered as at the moment may be vaccinated, irrespective of nationality. As the Honourable Minister said, we do have a challenge, and we are working on a solution to the challenge together with various bodies like the Human Rights Commission and the UNHCR and others, to make sure that we are able to vaccinate in due course, even those who have no documentation. So we recognize that challenge. And my last comment before I hand back to the DG and others on the team is around the so-called herd immunity. So the normally with vaccinations, with a very call it a stable virus that is not mutating all the time, it's possible to calculate the reproductive rate of the virus to be able to anticipate how many people in a community, and there's a scientific calculation and mathematics to do this, how many people and what percentage of a given population would need to be vaccinated to protect the remaining unvaccinated portion of the population. The problem with this virus is it mutates quite rapidly, and each mutation is quite different. So trying to get ahead of the game and anticipate what the next mutation is going to do is not at this stage something that is even viable. So what we do know is that every individual who is vaccinated is protected. We have plenty of evidence, as the Honourable Minister said, both from Johnson & Johnson vaccine, where we have a long track record of using that vaccine since February, and now with the early statistics we are beginning to pull out of our own data system on the Pfizer vaccine to show that the number of people vaccinated with these vaccines who are coming into hospital and getting severely ill and ending up in ICU are extremely few. Thank you very much, Chair.
May we please be guided by Deputy Minister? I think DG will advise who else needs to speak.
No, thank you very much, Chair. We're almost done. Dr. Pillay, do you have anything to add on the efficacy? Then I will say something on for a minute. Dr. Pillay, do you have anything to add?
DG, I think Dr. Kisnasamy, if he has some comment on
what... Oh, yes. Thank you. Dr. Perry Kisnasamy on the workplace program. Do you want to come in, Dr. Perry?
DG, I will. So if I can just share a slide, if that's possible through the chair.
Yes, Perry, if you can just be concise and be very short, please come through.
Short, because we're not made aware that there'll be another presentation.
Oh, no, I can give the inputs verbally, so it's not a problem. So I don't have to. The thing, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, and Chair of the Portfolio. Chair.
We may have to invite you on that focus area in the future, but for now, please attempt to answer the question as were raised by honourable members.
Chair, I'll do that. So. In terms of the workplace vaccination sites, as at 19th August, we've vaccinated 152,055 workers out of a target of 561,986 in 70 sites across South Africa. That's 27% of the workers in that site. Overall, we are targeting around about 6 million workers out of the 15 million formal workers, but we are ramping up now. We came out of a vaccine-constrained environment and essentially ramping up. In terms of the sites, there are 70 sites across South Africa, and they cover all provinces. They cover the agriculture, forestry sector, the automotive sector, the communications sector, hospitality and tourism, finance, manufacturing, mining, retail, services sector, informal sector. We tackle the taxi industry, state-owned enterprises, and telecoms. And the provincial breakdown, Chair, I can send the slides to Mr. Cutler so that it can be for the record. The current process is 2 in the Eastern Cape, 5 in the Free State, 24 in Gauteng, 9 in KwaZulu-Natal, 18 in Limpopo, 12 in Mpumalanga, 7 in the Northern Cape, 11 in Northwest, and 12 in the Western Cape. We try generally to cover quite a few sectors and quite a few provinces. And overall, just one of the big issues is that we actually reached 20% of the mining sector last week and really ramping up in terms of this. Let me stop there, Chair, and thank you for allowing me to present a brief update on the workplace sites. Over.
Yeah, what we can confirm is that, one, that presentation that we have, we may forward to PLO Joe Hatler. And we may have to have some time to have presentation on a workplace focus area as a presentation. But we thought it's important to answer to the question that members would have done. I think you have done that. DG, you may advise us who is next.
Thank you very much, Chair. Dr. Pillay, do you have anything to add?
DG, I think there are two other questions on efficacy as well as natural immunity. Good evening, DG, Honourable Chairperson and members. On the question about efficacy, I think it's important to differentiate the vaccine efficacy as it relates to breakthrough infections versus hospitalization as well as mortality. And so I think very often when you hear about vaccine efficacy, they're talking about breakthrough infections, meaning after being vaccinated, whether you have the symptoms of infection. That doesn't mean that the vaccine is not working. It just means that you are achieving the symptoms. If you look at the J&J vaccine and compare that to the Pfizer vaccine, you'll see that both those vaccines, in terms of mortality, are sitting at 90% protection. In the case of breakthrough infections, there are differences between Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson, but that's simply for the purpose of symptoms. So in other words, if you had the vaccine, what is the possibility of you achieving symptoms if you were infected? But certainly the J&J vaccine is not at 17%. It was reported in the literature at being at around 60%. So that's the number we know. I haven't heard of the 17%, and we haven't received any reports relating to that. On the question relating to natural immunity, I think it's important to say that the natural immunity appears to have a shorter duration than immunity that's conferred by the vaccine. That's why you would note that a person that has been infected, we also offer them the opportunity to be vaccinated as well, simply because the immunity that's conferred through vaccination appears to be longer lasting. One of the reasons why Honorable Sukers may have had the second infection as well, maybe because it's a different variant, and so consequently the immune system was not able to respond to the different variant that presented itself in the form of an infection. Thanks, DG.
DG? Very much, Dr. Pillay. I think all the questions have been covered, except to say for me, Honorable Chair, and honorable members, my minister and deputy minister. One, I want to assure the members of the committee that we don't procure any vaccine that is not registered by SAHPRA. That is a prerequisite. So there is no vaccine that was procured, whether it had a Section 21 or a full market authorization. So we want to correct that. The second one, the minister has corrected. For the digital vibes, there is no extra investigation. But we are working with a senior counsel that we appointed through the Office of the State Attorney to assist us, and we are dealing with the matter, as the minister has mentioned, following the relevant legislation. Then lastly is that the Ministerial Committee on Vaccines is actually working on issues of the under 17 and waiting for some data that has been submitted to SAHPRA. And as soon as that is ready, we'll then report back. I think all the questions have been covered, Honorable Chair. I will hand back to the Chair. Thank you very much.
Before we go, Chair, can we allow Dr. Dlomo to make his maiden speech?
Dr. Dlomo?
No, thank you very much for allowing me, Chairperson. And congratulations to you for being given the responsibility here in this portfolio committee. I must indicate that I had a mixed feeling when I was actually given the responsibility, one, to leave this portfolio committee that has been like my family for some time, and also but joining Dr. Pasha was actually another very good place. So there's no honeymoon in this department. But however, Dr. Pasha has been my mentor for the past 40 years. We met in 1980, and he has mentored me both academically and politically. He taught me a lot of good things, but he taught also me some other bad things. Those things were bad in the light of the government of that day, but between me and him, we agreed that those things were good. And then in commenting, I wanted to say, Honorable Ismail, I always take solace in this 10.9 million, even though people have not all of them being double vaccinated for those on Pfizer, because there's a scientist view that even if you go with one vaccine for now, you are 80% protected. So that is a very comforting statement to listen to. On one comment from Honorable Chirwa, we need to say maybe accelerating and mobilizing men will not just be a responsibility of one department. All of us should do. Generally, men in the world are very reluctant to visit clinics, even just to check up if things are okay. So
So maybe taking its services to the taxi rank and those that have, Dr. Kisnasam has mentioned, are some of the issues that have brought. But we will welcome some of the ideas that you would like to put forward, how we can mobilize, accelerate this campaign amongst men. Lastly, the minister invited me today to be part of a WHO regional work meeting. One of the important statements that most of the leaders are saying there is that, it was mainly focusing on vaccines, that vaccines do not prevent further COVID-19 infections, but they prevent complications and they prevent deaths. Now, the minister was making reference to saying, since we have now vaccinated almost all of our teachers and the healthcare workers, we are seeing less and less deaths. That is very comforting as we see that evidence. But the issue of fake news is something that is also troubling the whole continent and the whole world on the issues of COVID. Thank you very much for allowing me to make these comments. And yes, I am now officially left the Portfolio Committee of Health. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. May I allow the Secretary, before I make closing remarks, as I requested, that to announce the...
Sorry, Chairperson, I've had my hand up, raised my hand for a long time, so I don't think perhaps so that.
Honourable Sheikh Imam, I appealed to esteemed honourable members that I'm not going to have a second bite. Since you are the only person that would have had your hand up, I may allow you, but you'll be the last person, please. And please don't make it long.
Okay, no, I won't. Thank you, Chairperson, I won't. Chairperson, it's just the one point that is very important for this committee, Chairperson. And that is the issue of the AstraZeneca vaccine that was ordered. It was procured by the department. Every honorable member in this committee knows. The country knows it was ordered. There was no Section 21 application. Then the minister said he's going to put the application. The products were already on the way. The air flight went to fetch it and bring it through. And it was not registered at that stage or approved by SAHPRA at all. We all know that. Why is the department denying this, Chairperson? Thank you.
Okay. May I please ask the Secretary just to advise us as to when are we meeting SAHPRA so that I can make a closing remarks. If you may do that, our good Secretary, Sisfoyokas Manjalamba.
SAHPRA has been invited to appear before the committee on the 1st of September from 9 to 1:30. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. So those issues that relative to SAHPRA, they will be attended. I don't know whether the minister or the deputy minister want to answer Imam Sheikh before I go to concluding remarks.
Well, Chair, I think I wouldn't want us to venture into a dialogue.
Yeah,
I think let's leave it on his views. Thank you.
Okay. Esteemed honorable members and the department, Ministry of Health, this process is not the end of the process. It has not been the end. It has been a continuous process that esteemed honorable members of Parliament and Portfolio Committee, they received briefing, continuous briefing on the COVID-19 update, especially on the rollout program, sometimes on the epidemiology, and as well as the oxygen supply, which is much needed within our hospitals, and any supporting mechanism. It is, I think the meeting had consensus on one critical issues, that we have observed the comprehensive programs, which we believe is coherent to be able to outreach to our people with respect to vaccination. We make a call, continuous call, that our people must indeed take an opportune time to be able to have to access vaccine. And the department must work with the broad structures of society to make sure that this work becomes successful. I've been looking at the data analytics, the analysis of the, let's say, epidemiology trend across the globe, that it is inevitable that the fourth wave may cause havoc within the Republic. It is important that it fund us prepared, if indeed it will come. So it is very much important that all the critical issues raised by honorable members, we find a way how to resolve them. And I'm sure they are raised with a view, they were raised constructively with a view to try to find a collective resolution. We believe that the department alone may not succeed to mobilize and organize our society around these issues of vaccination. The program of working together with the Amakhosi, which means the chiefs, kings, and so on, and all these broad structures of society, civil society, NGOs, and organized labor, organized community constituency, as well as government and the private sectors. This broad front is critical if we are to succeed, to make sure that we have a coherent program to reach out to our people to have access to vaccine. We want every village, every township, every urban society to have access to vaccine. We are very excited that also there's some work that's being done within the continent, and we hope at the end of the day, in final analysis, everyone across the continent will have access to vaccine. There's no doubt that vaccine contributes to protection of our people, but nonetheless, we must deal with the myth that if a people are vaccinated, they may not get infection. It is also, we have to deal with the mass media propaganda around the anti-vaccination movement, around the myth that's associated with vaccine. It's very important that we have mass media propaganda, mass media campaign through local community radio station, as Dr. Chris would have outlined. And ourselves as honorable members of parliament, we need to be the lead ambassadors to carry out the message that mobilize and organize our people, so that we are able to come to buttress or complement the efforts of the ministry or the efforts of the department. And I'm sure the minutes will indicate all the issues that you have raised as a concern, where we think that there may not be sufficient response on issues that you have raised. We may write to the ministry to have some formal written reply. Thank you very much and have a great night until we meet pretty soon. I was very honored to have your discipline and collaboration while we work together in today's meeting. Thank you very much, honorable members. If there's any other issues, Secretary, that you want to put forward, you may do so.
There's nothing, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And this,
thank you very much, Chairperson.